Adam Driver is very Adrian Brody-esque.
Yes.
So then it's like, oh, no, it's not Adrian Brody. It's Adam Brody.
But it's not Adam
so
Brody.
So he's too connected. Yeah. He's, it'd be like if Bill Pullman and
Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton. I can't make
a
connection.
Because there is an Adam Brody. That's the kid from the OC. So it's like the combination of Adam Driver and Adrian Brody is not this kid.
Yeah.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Sometimes silence is the deadliest sound. A man seated across from me is always silent but deadly. It's Mr. Dave Becella.
Yep.
It's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. And that was a fart joke just 30 seconds into the show. You're welcome. Sometimes silence
is
the...
6 years building up to this.
Yeah, right. If we've only done one fart joke in 6 years, I think we're okay. Sometimes silence is the deadliest sound is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guest to us at moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, you will receive a prize package, which is anything but deadly. This week, The Silence comes out. That is the movie starring Sabrina.
That is not the Andrew Garfield movie.
No. No Andrew Garfield, no Adrian Brody, no Adam Brody, no Adam Driver either. Unfortunately. This is the Kiernan Shipka movie wherein she appears to try and survive an attack of monsters that can hear very well. And if that sounds familiar to you, we had a movie like that earlier this year. In case you don't know what that is, it was John Krasinski's A Quiet Place. So it got us to thinking, well, we can't really do our five favorite Kiernan Shipka movies, but we can do an episode on A Quiet Place. It's probably a movie. It was pretty high on my halftime report. Had you seen it at that point?
Oh, yeah. I saw it opening weekend.
Okay, yeah. So it was probably on both of our lists for halftime, and I suspect it'll probably make a list by the time the end of the year rolls around. If the season ended today, yes, it would be on my list for the end of the year, and I don't anticipate it getting knocked all the way off. So we probably won't talk about it a lot when we do our favorites of the year, but it was good enough, it made enough of an impression on both of us that it certainly, I think, warrants a standalone episode, kind of the inverse of the way we did It, where we got around to it the next year. This is like our mea culpa for that.
We both liked it. I think it'll be tough to not make my top 10. Like, I haven't looked at it, but I think it'll be up there, if not just on the outside. But if we can talk about it, why not? It feels like everybody saw it. Like, it made a lot of money.
It did. It made $50 million on April 6th, 2018, which was its opening weekend. That was good for first place that week. It ended the 1 week run at the top by Ready Player One, which I like. I might be the only guy. Blockers, Black Panther, and Tyler Perry's Acrimony round out the top five.
That was Black Panther in like week,
on that week. Yeah,
eight or it, something.
Oh, I think it was more than that. Yeah. Nonetheless, that's where it was at. Got beat by John Cena in that week. A Quiet Place went on to gross $188 million domestically, which puts it in 219th place on the all-time domestic list. One spot above this less than stellar Matthew McConaughey movie from 2014.
Oh, that Nolan one, Interstellar.
Yes, Interstellar, yes. I appreciate how you got the director and not so much the name of the movie, which was in the clue. But you, eventually you did.
Title.
Yeah, but that's all right. Good on you. One spot below this 2012 ensemble video game movie. Ensemble video game movie is a way to describe a movie that just came out with a sequel last weekend.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph.
Wreck-It Ralph, yeah. Indeed. This year's Lady Gaga B. Coop A Star Is Born is in 214th place with over $191 million and counting. That's four spots below Toy Story's $191.7 million and the last of the Indiana Jones movies, 1989's The Last Crusade, is at 204 with $197.1 million. A Quiet Place, I kind of had to go back and look. It's rated PG-13. Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense. You know, there's not a lot of gore. There's really no cussing.
No boobies.
Nope, none of those.
No snatch.
Nope, no snatch either.
No afterbirth.
We narrowly avoided that. What it does have is an excellent example of Dave's point that you can do PG-13 horror movie, and you can do it well. to my point, it is rare. And I started looking at the top grossing horror PG-13 movies. Stop me when I get to a movie that you think is actually a horror movie. So this is total domestic box office for PG-13 movies. To get to anything that sniffs horror, you're down in 53rd place with The Sixth Sense. Is that a horror movie?
Technically, I think.
Okay, so 53. Number 87, another M. Night Shyamalan movie, Signs.
Yeah, technically.
Okay. World War Z. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
In 111th place. Right below that, The Mummy Returns, which is...
Both of those are more like action-adventure movies.
Sure. 2014's Godzilla is 114th.
I don't consider that a horror movie at all.
Then A Quiet Place at 124.
That's a horror movie.
Yeah, that is a horror movie. But after A Quiet Place, you got to go all the way down to 177 for 2000's What Lies Beneath.
Yikes.
Which is a horror movie.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Is that Michelle Pfeiffer, Harrison
Ford? That was Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford with $155 million. So that gives you kind of a rough idea of what $188 million for a PG-13 horror movie is. You said yes to the at least the four, if not Godzilla, maybe all five movies that were above Quiet Place. But there's only five that have been more successful than this one. So it is rare that a PG-13 horror movie... Is this successful at the box office? I mean, we both like Happy Death Day an awful lot. I like it more than Godzilla, more than The Mummy Returns, more than World War Z, more than Signs. But it didn't make that much money, so it doesn't get to make this list.
And here's my thing on Signs.
Yeah.
If you look at it differently, I like Signs until like the last 5 minutes because aliens are stupid, if that's a thing. But if you look at
it's not the first time that's happened.
If you look at it, they're not aliens. And you don't look at it as an alien invasion movie, and instead you go the opposite direction, that these are demons escaping from hell, then the ending makes a lot more sense. So I'm all for giving Signs another chance.
Under the understanding.
Guise that it's a demon movie and not an alien movie.
Fair enough. Another thing that kind of jumped out at me, I mean, this movie was very, very successful commercially. It was also Krasinski's directorial debut, which I don't think was glossed over at the time. And I think... He managed to make a massively successful PG-13 horror movie, not just from a box office standpoint, but critically, people love it as well. And if any director was able to do one of those things, I think that's spectacular. You look at what M. Night Shyamalan did with Sixth Sense. That really made his career. He made a critically acclaimed horror movie, PG-13, made a ton of money. It made more than this, but one of those things I think is a hell of an accomplishment. But he was able to pull off both in his debut, which is super impressive.
Speaking of odd comparisons, this is similar to Get Out in the sense that...
Oh, that's going to come up.
The guy from the sketch comedy show is directing a horror movie. This is the guy that looks at the camera in the office is making a horror movie. So I think people go in with, like, if it's watchable, that's a success. But for both of these movies... They're not just watchable.
They're above watchable.
They're really, really yes. good. So you go in with expectations low, and you get a movie that would have met high expectations. So I think that worked in both of their favors. They're both really, really good. Krasinski did some good stuff with this. Both this and Get Out, they came out and they brought their A game. They weren't just point-and-click directors for their debut. They brought it, and they came out swinging, and they both delivered.
I will admit to when I started thinking about, man, this was the guy's debut. This is a really, really good movie for a day. I mean, it's a good movie for anybody, let alone a guy that's leading off. And it got me thinking, like, all right, is this one of the best directorial debuts ever? And then my brain melted a little bit, and I stepped back from that. Orson Welles made Citizen Kane, which was his feature-length debut, and it's regarded for decades as one of the best movies ever. If not the best ever. I did have to pump the brakes on the Halpert hype train there for a little bit. But specifically, we love sci-fi and horror around here. And you've already mentioned Get Out, but if you think in the last couple of years, we had Krasinski, A Quiet Place this year. Jordan Peele did Get Out last year. Robert Eggers did The Witch in 2016. 2015, Alex Garland did Ex Machina. In 2014, Jennifer Kent did The Babadook. Those are all directorial debuts and all fucking amazing movies. Rank the five of those. see where A Quiet Place fits in on that list. It's tough and it's impromptu.
I mean, I was only half listening, so it's tough. I think one would be Babadook.
Yes.
Babadook, Ex Machina. And then it's a toss-up. It really is a toss-up between Get Out and Quiet Place for me. I know you would have, I think you'd have Get Out a little bit higher. It's a flip-flop for me. Of the two, maybe Quiet Place. So, I mean, any list where Get Out is fourth, that's a pretty solid list.
That's kind of my point. I had The Witch at 5. I had Ex Machina at 4.
I'm a Garland show,
I know,
though.
I know.
Like, it's hard.
Get Out at 3, Quiet Place 2,
Babadook 1. It was his directorial
debut,
but Garland, I got a lot of love for Garland before that. So.
Yeah, granted. But I guess that's what I'm trying to put out here is, and we've mentioned this a couple times already this year, we've been incredibly fortunate recently with some absolutely outstanding horror movies and directors coming into the... Now, I'm not saying that...
Because even this year, you have Ari Aster with Hereditary. That's a hell of a debut.
It is. We've been spoiled, I think, with people that... I don't know if Jordan Peele is going to stay in horror. I don't know if Krasinski's going to. I mean, he's signed on to do Quiet Place 2, which, I mean, how the hell can you not? The movie sets itself up well enough for a sequel. When we did our mini lists in Halloween, where we did our five favorites from every year, we had a lot of really good movies that I think would be very high on our top 100 list if we were to redo that, maybe with some of these newer movies. And I think Get Out, I think that was on our list. Mm-hmm. I think A Quiet Place for me, I think is a better movie. Maybe that's just my perspective, but as much love and attention as Get Out got last year, and it should have received all of it, and maybe even more, I'm going to be a little bit pissed if come Oscar time this year, we don't get anything for A Quiet Place. I don't think it's going to.
I mean, I could see sound editing would be good.
For sure, yeah. But Best Picture nom?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. Was it a better script than Get Out? I don't think so.
No.
And I mean,
what would the script be?
Be quiet.
Right.
Like, I think Get Out was a very well-written script, and, yeah, and I think the performances were better because they had more to do. Although Krasinski and Blunt, well, not really Krasinski. I think Blunt was really, really good. Krasinski was fine, but it wasn't one of those where you could put anybody in that role, and I feel like it wouldn't have changed much. Where Blunt, I think, was really, really good, and then Millicent was really, really good.
She was phenomenal. And both of them, Emily Blunt and Millie Simmons, were both really good. And I actually think that the performances in this movie, because it is PG-13, like, it doesn't rely on gore, or it doesn't rely on much to keep you sucked into this, except for the actors. And so much of it, because they can't, for the most part, through the movie, they can't emote with dialogue. It all plays out on their faces. And I think that is a much more difficult thing. And I'm not taking anything away from Daniel Kaluuya. He was fantastic in Get Out. But I think the performances in this, specifically Emily Blunt, the giving birth scene, everything's right there, from terror, because there's a monster there, pain, she's given birth, and even a little bit of hope that, oh my God, this might actually turn out okay.
From that angle, like, I think Get Out was a much better script, but if you say, hey, here's Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out, and here's Emily Blunt in A Quiet Place, which one should be up for an acting Oscar? I'm going Emily Blunt, and that's not against him. Like,
right. Think about one of the best scenes from Get Out, when he's attached to that chair. I mean, it's
that eye and the tear.
Right,
and
That's the entire movie for A Quiet Place.
And I get that. Yeah, that's good. She's really, really good. And I thought the beard for Krasinski was an odd choice because his face was so emotive in The Office, and that's what people think of when they think of Jim Halpert is the looks at the camera. So you have this really expressive face that you're covering up 60% of because that's not what he was there to do. Because
it's post-apocalyptic, and is the guy really going to worry about shaving?
Emily Blunt didn't.
She didn't shave?
I mean, she did. The deaf daughter, I think, makes the movie. If you don't have her character, it changes the dynamic of the movie drastically.
It's certainly much different.
Yeah, because I didn't know that going in. I knew the gist of it. It's like, oh, they can't make noise because there's monsters.
Right.
I didn't know the one character was deaf, and that let them play with the sound a lot. some of the best moments came from playing with that sound, going between what she hears and what you hear, I thought was done really, really well.
Now you don't hear with your eyes.
You don't breathe with your ears.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about moments from that movie, and you know, we talk about that a lot on this show, is what a movie has to hit moments to be good. And the scene where she's giving birth is great, and the scene with, you know, the kids out in the cornfield, hit that. When
in the silo, like, I like that.
Right, yeah, when you have, you know, this juxtaposition between this monster that can't see, can only hear, and then a kid that can only see, can't hear, that allowed you to have this sort of cat and mouse game play out there, which for the most part, this movie was a giant cat and mouse game. And one of the best things about it was how they were really able to draw you in and kind of put you on the edge of your seat. The movie was very immersive.
It was an atmospheric movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were able to do that, as you said, through the use of sound or lack thereof. So much so that I saw this in the theater by myself. There was no one else in there. And I was still trying not to, like, drink my soda loud at the times where the...
Put the popcorn down.
I didn't even get popcorn, fortunately. But yeah, like, you're hooked and you're trying not to make any noise. That's not what's going to get Jim killed.
It wasn't 3D.
No, it wasn't. Sitting in an empty theater, it was a great moving-going experience. And I just thought, any director that's going to tell a story, and this, he helped write the script, so this very much was Krasinski's story, but for any director to be able to pull you into the movie that well in his first time, it's going to sound like I'm slobbering all over the guy, because I kind of am. I was really impressed with technically the way he was able to make this movie and really make you feel like you're a part of it.
Now I can't stop comparing it to Get Out.
I think it's a fair comparison. They're both fantastic horror movies that came out less than a year apart.
And I think from a little more technical aspect and like an overall aspect, maybe I lean more towards Get Out from a directing standpoint, obviously a script standpoint. But I mean, it was good. And the creature design was great. If you build up to that and you just have like a spider in the sewer, it kind of like you wasted 4 hours getting there. But the creature design, by the time you get there, it's like, oh, okay, these are dope.
They looked really cool. That's kind of the other thing about this movie being, not necessarily being PG. You can still have a cool-looking creature in a PG-13 movie. But it's just so many times I think a monster movie uses their monster as a crutch. A lot of times they have a shitty monster. And you're like, come on, if you're going to do a monster movie, at least have a cool-looking creature. But this movie had a cool-looking creature, but didn't overly rely on it.
They Hannibal Lectered it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is the highlight of the movie. You're not going to get it much.
Exactly. And because you don't get much of the creature, you're really left with just essentially those four actors.
And it helps pay off everything that much more because in their scenario, they've seen the monsters, especially when it ate the little kid. Like, they've seen the monsters, but they haven't really been
up. Did you get a good look at them, you think?
Exactly. They haven't been up close to them.
Right.
They've seen them, but they haven't really, like, been within enough to see the drool and everything. So we haven't either. He held off, and instead of giving us a good look, we got glimpses like they've had. And then at the end, when it's there, it's in the room with them, they're reacting to it for the first time the same time we are, which I think adds to it.
You sort of get that Jurassic Park tease where the kid gets got right at the beginning. That's another...
And I mean, he deserved it.
Yeah, but that's another great example of, you know, him drawing you in. They completely cut the sound, and you're just walking, you're seeing all the family members, and
it did a good job of setting the stakes and how quick it can turn.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't rush to it. It's not a quick Jurassic Park tease where within 30 seconds you get it. You built up to it. It's a lot of slow. It's
a lot
of quiet.
Yeah, it's probably the first 5-6 minutes.
And then it happens.
Yeah.
So it shows like just how quick things can turn on sound.
But you don't even get to see the raptor, so to speak. You just know that, like, oh shit, these things are going to snatch it up, and it happens just that quick. So you're right. Throughout the rest of the movie, we know just how dangerous these things are and how deathly serious it is. If there is a sound, they are coming, and they're going to get you.
That was mean when I said he deserved it. I don't condone monsters eating little kids. I just think that's a stupid toy. I wish they'd have picked a better toy.
That whole scene, the kid draws the rocket on the floor, and he's like, this is how we're going to escape. It kind of makes your heart break a little bit there before he gets killed, because you're just thinking, there's this tiny kid, and he knows how bad things are. But yet he's got some hope to like, oh, well, this is how we'll get away. We'll just get in a rocket. Because staying here, you're going to get killed. That's the world that this kid lives in. And that's kind of another thing. Post-apocalyptic movies. Yeah, it was a monster movie. It's about a family. Because those are your only characters in the movie. It's a family, and it's trying to cope with the loss of the little kid and the guilt. But to me, it's also, maybe I'm reading more into this than I ought to. We find out very soon that Emily Blunt's pregnant. And you're like, why on earth would you do that? Why would you try and bring a child into this world? I mean, I think about that now, and there aren't monsters out there waiting to...
If you drop a pizza on your way home, do you just go home without dinner, or do you go get another pizza?
Are we comparing children to pizza? Because I like one of those things a lot.
I'm really hungry at this point in the
day. Fair enough. It's one of those deals that Sarah looked over and she's like, what are they going to do with this baby? And I was like, oh, well, just wait. They're going to show you how that part was thought out. They had all their bases covered. It's just like, I know we got to repopulate the human race, but I don't know. I guess I feel like maybe a year is too soon. Let's try and figure this out. But maybe they had to have that baby to save the marriage.
I guess. I don't know.
But we wouldn't have had that great scene in the basement if we didn't have the kid. I think at the end of the day, I guess what you're left with is a very simple premise. Don't make any sounds or you're going to get killed. But sometimes I think the simplest premises can lead you to the best movies. They didn't overcomplicate things. We just got a really, really good bottle story about one family trying to stay alive. Not a lot of bells and whistles, but a really tight, there's no fat in this movie at all, I don't think.
I like that it took the prepper aspect of it to see just what they're doing to survive. When he says rockets or whatever, they've planned for this. They know the red lights, like there's a plan for everything. I like that aspect of it because how do you raise a family here? Like, oh, it's very meticulous. They've thought through everything. I could see how they could think that we can bring a baby here, and they're not just surviving. Like,
it wasn't
living.
Luck.
Yeah, they're living, and they're still enjoying their family. And I like the element of loss and her feeling broken and him not really able to connect with her. And there's some good emotion in it, and she was really, really good. It's really, really good. And it's the kind of movie where when you only really have four performances, really, if one of them is subpar, that brings everything down. Or even if the directing is weak, it can't make up for four good performances. And everything's on. The sound mixing was great. The visuals were great for a quiet movie. I just really like it. It was really, really good. They took a basic story and made you care. And
they didn't lean on what horror movies generally do. This does not have a high body count. I mean, technically four, if you don't count the monster. There's not a lot of gore. I mean, it is those performances that this movie stands on, as well as the technical stuff that Krasinski did. So, I mean, I do think it's wonderful. Am I going to be super pumped to see A Quiet Place 2? Nah, maybe not.
I don't need it.
I think he deserves that opportunity, though. I'm happy that he got it.
But I don't want to see more Emily, as good as Emily Blunt and the girl were. I don't want to see them. I don't need them more. I don't need more of that.
We say this all the time, but I could use a story. We know there are other survivors. We've seen the fires.
So, I mean, like, do what Cloverfield should have done, where it's here's more in the same universe.
Right.
And I don't know that they'll do that.
Maybe they get together. I don't think so. I mean, from what it sounds like, everyone outside of Krasinski is signed on to appear in the next one. So it does sound like we're going to get the continuing adventures of that family. It's one of those movies that made a ton of money. Of course, they were going to have a sequel. It's more surprising nowadays when these movies don't. But I am interested now in him as a director. I'll love to see what stories he wants to tell, even if they're not in the horror genre. If you can't tell by now, he's impressed me enough to where he's now a director, like Jordan Peele did last year, that if he's doing something, I'm into it. I'm very much into Spider-Man and have been for years. We are getting a Spider-Man movie this year, not of the MCU variety, but it is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse comes out next week. So we dip into the Spider-Verse to find our five favorite movies starring folks that are playing Spider-Man in Into the Spider-Verse. Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, Nick Cage, and Haley Steinfeld. We didn't put any Spider-Ham movies on there. So if you're John Mulally or his parents and you're hoping that we're going to talk a lot about him next week, we won't, but we mentioned him this week. So that's what you got to look forward to next week. And then we're kind of wrapping up the end of the year. We've got a Steve Carell list. It's going to be a lot of fun to do. And then the Uppies. And that'll be about it for us. It's kind of hard to believe it's already the end of the year, but we have some really fun episodes coming up. So stick with us for the rest of the year. But until next week,
keep it up.